in the literature of this teaching. The metaphor of Narcissus is used again and again. It is the metaphor of the ego or the mind. The mind is not just thinking and so forth, you see. And the ego is not just me. The archetype of Narcissus is used to characterize the strategy, the significance of mind or self. Popular religion and mysticism serve the self, serve the mind, provide consoling objects of belief, experience, absorption, attractive states that may fulfill us in the midst of our fear. Ultimately, all experience serves this separate being, this separate person. Conventional and popular religion and spirituality is addressed to the ego, to the mind. What is popularly conceived to be God realization or mystical absorption or true religious belief is a state of mind, a condition or experience of the manifest personality, Narcissus. Experience, inwardness, is the hedge around Narcissus, the enclosure of the self. Narcissus is described as a person looking into a pond at his own image. But this is a metaphor for the mind. The mind is a reflective mechanism. The ego, the self, is a reflection. To enter into the realm of the mind, then, to persist in our subjectivity, our separate self-experience, is to be self-possessed, not to be God-possessed. No matter how profound these inward phenomena may be or may seem to be at any time, the states of mystical inwardness have nothing whatsoever to do with God realization, absolutely nothing to do with it. They are simply experiential states of the separate personality. But mystical experience is promoted to people as a solution to suffering, as an answer to doubt and fear. Just like saviors and popular religious concepts are offered to people for the same purpose. But the realization of God, the realization of truth, appears and appears spontaneously only in the instant of self-transcendence, the transcendence or annihilation of mind, of inwardness, of self-consciousness, of reflection on oneself via experience. Ego death, self-transcendence, or the transcendence of the mind, then, is the vehicle or doorway to the realization of truth. So, the old saw about truth being within, whoever said that, you see, is not true. The truth is absolutely not within. There is no truth within. Within is me. Within is the inside of me. Conventional mysticism, conventional religion is addressed to our inwardness because the psyche, the inner being and mind, can feel itself separate from the body and the physical environment and all the conditions of mortal existence of which we are afraid. All the conditions that can die. So the ordinary mystics throughout human history have separated themselves out from body consciousness by withdrawing attention from the body and from relations, becoming more or less ascetic, and concentrated in the brain through various mystical devices, mystical and religious devices of concentration and contemplation and prayer. And by detaching themselves from the physical and entering into the mind itself, they could feel as if they were free of the body and free of mortality. And they could see all kinds of abstractions flashing in the nervous system, and the mind would explode into reveries, into dreamlike states, and seem to take them to various other worlds. Archetypes would come flooding into the conscious mind, detached from physical sensation. And these states were regarded to be holy. These were regarded to be the conditions under which God was realized, mortality escaped, truth attained. And one who was able to persist in such a condition of internal absorption would participate only in minimal fashion or with a certain kind of humor in the daily life of the world until death, at which point he looked forward to going elsewhere or permanently within. And so there is the popular spiritual or mystical notion that truth is within, and it is really a non-rational or irrational belief, such as Jesus died for our sins, or the Jews are the chosen people of God, or the religion of Islam is the only true revelation, and so forth. Or the idea that scientific investigation observes objective reality. This is also an irrational or non-rational belief. All of these activities, including so-called scientific activity, are the works of man. They are expressions of the nervous system, expressions of parts of the body, the brain, and so forth. We are all participating in a vast realm of nonsense. And we are struggling to make sense of it by attaching ourselves to various kinds of phenomena. We are confronted by a chaos of experience. We focus it all in terms of our own independent consciousness. We make a universe out of chaos, in other words, by being a center of experience. And then we move around in that universe in various ways, internally, externally. We exploit our experiential possibilities. The truth of the matter is that we are terrified by our condition. We are afraid because we exist and we observe that our existence is threatened and that it apparently can come to an end. We also observe that our existence can be made to achieve various kinds of pleasurable distraction. So we are attached to all the ways we can feel good, and we are afraid of all the ways that we can suffer and be annihilated. That is our fundamental response to existence, that fear. And it is what produces religion, mysticism, conventional spirituality, science, culture, everyday life. All the mortals struggling to be satisfied. The transcendental teaching of wisdom or truth belongs to a different stream of communication than all of this orderly chaos of conventional consciousness, secular, religious, mystical, spiritual, however it is named. And this truth is that I, whoever speaks it, I is the body. And when I am afraid, when I contract and withdraw from the conditions in which this body is arising, I become self-possessed. I recreate the universe by reflection. And I look to be satisfied in my separateness by indulging my possibilities within and without. And any individual I can come up with its particular plan of salvation, its particular philosophy. And any society can come up with its official truth, its official distractions. But there is no truth, no liberation from the fear that is native to self-consciousness. There's no liberation whatsoever until the inner being, which is created by fear, is transcended. So the matter of God realization, or the realization of truth, or liberation, is fundamentally a matter of ego death, or the death of the illusion of the inner consciousness, the separate I, the mind. Popular dogmas of mysticism presume that the inwardness of mind is in the direction of salvation. Mind is the way of salvation. Truth is within. If some mystic comes through on his tour, he tries to convince people of the super reality of inwardness, tries to convince them that the truth of them is within and that they should relax their attachment to worldly things and to the body. Most often celibacy and privacy, non-responsiveness are recommended. The person is invited to begin the process of the inner tour to acquire the glamorous, self-glamorizing experiences of inwardness. Now, it is true there is something that must be understood about the mechanisms of this body-mind that are subtler than talking and eating and sleeping and sexing and so forth. And all aspects of this body-mind must be inspected and become a matter of responsibility. On the other hand, the phenomena within are not the truth. They're not the way of truth. The way of truth is the transcendence of the inner being, the death of the ego. So it is true there must be a time of experiencing, of exploration, of the conditions of this body-mind, gross and subtle, without and within. But that process of inspection must be done in such a manner that all of these phenomena are transcended, are understood, are rightly interpreted, are seen not to be the truth, but seen to be the work of Narcissus. And ultimately, if this affair is pursued with great intensity, the phenomenon called ego death, or self-transcendence, or the transcendence of mind, occurs. There may be momentary intuitions of it, approximations of it, but ultimately, it is simple, direct, absolute, and there is no returning from it. The illusion of the inner being is utterly destroyed. You have probably read descriptions by people who have passed through this event. Ramana Maharshi, for instance, talks about the primary event of his own transformation. He describes it very briefly, but he says he was suddenly overcome by great fear of death. Out of nowhere, he suddenly became terrified. And in the brief passage, which I'm sure you've read, in which he describes what occurred during the next half hour, he seems to imply that he did something like inquire, "Who am I?" or something like that, you see. Something along the lines of the practice that he recommended to people who came to him over the years. Fundamentally, that's not what goes on in such a case, was not what went on in that case. He was suddenly overcome by fear, absolute and irrevocable, unavoidable terror. That's what happened. He became so terrified that he was unable to make any of the ordinary gestures by which to feel better, by which to become self-possessed. He lost his mind. He was too terrified to create mind. He lost himself. He was too terrified to become self-possessed. The fear reaction, which is the primary reaction of all individual beings to all experience, simply took place. And none of the conventional methods that we use to avoid that fear, to be consoled and distracted from that fear, none of that was possible for him. And so instead of coming up with a vision, you see, instead of going within, instead of seeing Krishna, instead of believing in Jesus, instead of concentrating on psychophysical states produced by Kundalini and so forth, instead of any of that, he was absorbed in the intuition of the naked reality that precedes the self-contraction. That intuition, that direct awareness of the condition in which we exist, is the only form of liberation. It is the only form of God realization or the realization of truth. Very few people in the history of mankind have ever realized this intuition. Of those who have, only a fraction of them realize this intuition absolutely, permanently, and fully, with perfect clarity. In the Knee of Listening, there are descriptions of incidents of this kind, culminating in the incident at the Vedanta Temple, or the series of incidents at the Vedanta Temple, which had a final event. And those events, many of them, were typically associated with profound fear. It wasn't that there was something that could be done to stop being afraid. What was significant about those incidents was that there was nothing that could be done about fear. The trouble with our ordinary state is that we look for and imagine that there are ways to be free of our fear. We anxiously seek for consolations to our fear. Most people aren't very profound about it. They look for ways in which to be satisfied by vital self-indulgence, physical self-indulgence, that will fulfill them, give them a sense of self-fulfillment or pleasure. But these moments pass, and they must be repeated again and again, and ultimately, by the practice of the solution to fear by physical self-indulgence, the person degenerates physically and emotionally, psychologically. Then there are others who pursue religious distractions from this fear through all kinds of beliefs and so forth. That's a little bit more profound. And generally they moderate their physical life to varying degrees. You have the extreme of the downtown, like American, typical American religious person who doesn't fundamentally do very much different than the ordinary self-indulgent non-believer. Then you have the other extremes of a more serious religious people in American culture, Western culture, Eastern culture. People who aren't doing very much more than believing in some answer that will distract them from fear, but on the other hand, they are engaged in varying degrees of self-discipline, everywhere from moderation to asceticism. And then there's another class of individuals who are the more extraordinary, who actually become committed to extremes of religious and mystical inversion, and to become profoundly detached from relationships in the physical world and all the forms of physical self-indulgence that others consider to be ordinary and normal and necessary. And so those who are new, who are beginning their search in life, become associated with others who are practicing one or another of these answers and pick up habits. And you can pick up habits from ascetic swamis, just like you can pick them up from drunkards. You become associated with different types of people in your life, and you hear them communicate, and you observe them doing this and that, and you repeat what they appear to be doing, believe what they're believing, you see, and attain these experiences yourself, and decide for yourself how distracted you are by that. And whatever level of it, simple or complex, you find more or less distracting, see, sufficient for the level of anxiety or fear that besets you in your downtown or daily consciousness, that becomes your style, your answer. Except in those perhaps extreme moments of naked fear. In which everything that you have done, everything you've experienced, everything you've realized becomes superficial. But most people try to keep themselves occupied so that this kind of incident doesn't occur very often. And they try to keep it from occurring at all, as a matter of fact. So we ritualize every aspect of our daily lives so that no moment becomes a moment in which we are not capable of distraction, self-possession. We always have the option of self, of mind, of experience in some form, so that the fundamental fear of annihilation that is native to a separate consciousness, you see, does not have to be experienced. But in truth, it is this reaction that must be experienced. If it is not experienced, there is no realization of truth. All of life, all of ordinary life, all the lives that you may observe, all the lives that you are individually living, you see, are built upon this fear. They are solutions to a reaction for which you are not fundamentally responsible. The reaction of self-possession, of fear. Rather than observe that and feel it with the most profound intensity, you entertain all of the ways that you have for distracting yourself by experience. And this, in fact, is what all of mankind does. And each individual, each class of individuals who finds some distracting way that is found to be capable of duplication by others and which is found to be sufficiently satisfying or distracting is dogmatically and righteously maintained to be the certainly a way, if not the only way. And these various ways are protected, you see, by creating cults or circles of practice and conversation that are essentially impenetrable by other persuasions, other kinds of groups, other techniques, other ways. And in this sense, cultism is a negative phenomenon in the highest spiritual sense, even though these cults may otherwise have some sort of social and ordinary psychological value and so forth. And in fact, every aspect of the daily life of everyone is a liturgy, a ritual, a part of cultic life. There is not a single person who doesn't belong to many cults. Every aspect of experience that you have had anything to do with in your entire life is a cultic phenomenon. Something that's been done again and again and again and again by countless other people. You have simply become associated with it, duplicated it, repeated it, become attached to it. Every aspect of ordinary life is a ritual. played by Narcissus, the separate personality. Now, the root of all conventional activity, society, religion, mysticism, and so forth, is a reaction to existence, a reaction to manifest existence. It is a reaction of whole bodily contraction, fear, self-possession, self-meditation. Everything that we as individual beings do from that point is built upon that gesture. That is the bottom line, the undercurrent, the fundamental gesture on which all ordinary life is built, and all extraordinary lives also. So in our conventional seeking, in our pursuit of truth or wisdom, God, we become distracted by forms of self-indulgence, practices, experiences, ideas that console and distract the separate self, Narcissus. The way of true wisdom, however, is rare and fine and profound. And it is not a way that is found congenial or really interesting to most people. And so there is, for instance, this idea of ego death, which you all have entertained in some fashion or other in your thinking, which you have even presumed perhaps you were involved in your disciplined practice of religion and spirituality. But it remains nothing more than an idea associated with some sort of self-denial. Ego death is really, as a popular idea, not anything much more than death itself. If ego death is the end phenomenon of a long process of self-denial, the only thing that could be at the end of a long process of self-denial is death. So ordinary death, you see, and ordinary suffering and self-deprivation, negative manipulation of oneself, in other words, characterizes the popular and professional consideration or understanding of ego death. Therefore, this profound, ultimate, and necessary process of ego death or self-transcendence is not rightly understood, is misunderstood, is misrepresented, has become a popular idea. And so people who engage in nothing more than ordinary mystical activity, an ordinary religious activity, presume that they have something to do with this matter of ego death and that they are working toward it, you see. And the ego, the self, the me who's pursuing truth, consolation, liberating experience, can manipulate its experience in all kinds of ways, but it can't bring itself to an end. Thereby, it has no intention of bringing itself to an end, truly, except as a kind of negative, doubting, desperate idea. Ego death is not itself the result of something that the ego can do to itself. The death of the ego is simply the cessation of self-possession, the gesture of contraction, the gesture of fear, the gesture of self-meditation, the gesture of the entire life that creates me and inwardness and my experience and my truth and my God, my religion, my mysticism. It's the end of that gesture. It is the confession. I am the body. Which is the beginning, you see. It is the beginning of our existence. A sheer, naked, mindless, bodily birth. It is the original of our experience. Original in time and original in this moment. But we have betrayed and abandoned that naked and simple principle. Out of fear, we notice that it can die, that I can die. And so we create in its place the self, the subjective being with its eternal history, the soul, the mind. And we enter into this tour of the self. Until ego death. Until the death of that gesture, until the death of the mind. Until we return to the body. In its naked condition. That process can take only one moment. It can take years. It can take one's entire life until death. It can take many lifetimes. In the physics of things, this separate personality, this inner me, this soul, this mind, is made of subtler aspects of the energy of the total body. And so it continues to exist even though the physical body dies. Mere physical death is not liberating and is not the end. The illusions with which we are possessed up to the moment of physical death persist in various experiential ways after death, and we resume our creative tour to produce more and more fulfilling distractions as soon as we can acquire another experimental body, another birth. And all those lifetimes are nonsense. All those experiences take place in the chaos of infinity, but we make a universe out of our experience through self-possession. So it seems somehow interesting, it seems somehow to make sense. See, if you hold up a finger in a windstorm, it all seems to be revolving around it. And if you withdraw the finger, it returns to chaos. You see, there is no center. So the matter of liberation or truth has nothing whatever to do with all those lifetimes of ordinary and extraordinary experiences as the self, the inner being, the soul. The matter of truth takes place or is realized when that whole adventure is understood, transcended, and there is a return to the condition or the starting point of all of that. And that starting point is not back in time anywhere, it is in this moment, prior to the contraction of the body, the contraction of feeling, the contraction of consciousness, the contraction of the psyche, the definition of self, the beginning of thinking, inwardness, dreaming, experiencing, Prior to all of that, you see, simply bodily present. We are in touch with the naked truth of existence. The usual individual, extraordinary or ordinary, must return to that primary or naked condition of his existence. He does this through discriminating insight, radical intuition, relative to all of his experience, all of his activity, all of his inwardness. And the transition from ordinary consciousness to the awakened consciousness is fear. And there isn't any way to not go through it. Ultimately, everyone must go through that. Everyone must make that transition. Not inspecting one's fear. Not performing some sort of spiritual technique while being afraid. And not just being psychotically terrified. You know, and being me afraid. But actually passing through that fear. All the way through that fear. Beyond all of the gestures that one is equipped to make to be free of that fear, to be distracted from that fear. One must pass through the whole affair of mind and become the body only.